Welcome to the
Super Apuestas Podcast.
I'm your co-host Stephen Graham with
J.R. Goldberg.
And we're here to talk some Apuestas matches. How you doing, J.R.?
I am excellent. I am doing pretty good. I had a nice light day at work today and at the old shoot job, right? Yes. Now I get to have fun. So
yeah, it's
WrestleMania week. Yeah, so how can I not be excited?
Exactly. I've took the weekend off coming up.
Yeah.
So I can sit there with Flow Slam in the WWE Network and just watch stuff essentially from Thursday evening nonstop until Sunday evening. Yeah. Have you seen it? Like, there's legit, like, there's 8 o'clock to 11, 11 to whenever on Thursday. And then it, like, starts at noon on Friday and goes to, like, 2 a.m. And then it starts on Friday. Same thing on Saturday. And then Sunday, there's something. And then WrestleMania.
There's even, like, there's the after show after WrestleMania now. I don't know if that's
Talking
streaming.
Smack or what is
there? No, like, there's an indie show.
Just, oh, yeah, yeah. I don't know if that's streaming.
At, like, it might be something on Sunday night.
Oh, man. We all know Joey Janela's show is the highlight of the week.
Yeah, that's the real WrestleMania. Yeah.
Isn't Glacier there? Like,
Glacier is there, yeah.
Marty Jannetty versus Joey Janela.
Yeah, that'll be it. I mean, obviously, Matt Riddle versus Dan Severn
is the key. Doink the Clown?
Yeah, there may be Doink. I mean, the show is insane, and it, like, it's going to be totally insane. I loved the announcement where, like, they, you know, he teased making, like, a new match announcement, and then the announcement was that, like, they didn't have enough to pay Earl Hebner for a full match, so they're gonna do a ref bump and then an Earl Hebner run-in.
I didn't hear that one.
Yeah. So we know at least one match is gonna have a ref bump, you know?
That's hilarious. Oh, man. So, before we get into our show this week, which has some WrestleMania tie-ins, which we'll talk about in a minute, we do have a listener question, and this comes from...
Yeah, this one was from Brock Jonke. I don't know how to pronounce your last name. I apologize. But one of my favorite wrestling writers. So if you enjoy my stuff at all, I think he writes in a pretty similar vein.
A strong supporter of the show.
Yeah, and a very strong supporter of the show, so I really appreciate it. But he asked both of us what our first Apuestas matches were, the first ones that we saw. And I racked my brain. I think my guess, if it counts, which I'm going to say it does, is probably Warrior Savage from what, WrestleMania 7, right?
Yeah, Warrior Savage, Piper Adonis.
Maybe? Yeah. Yeah.
One of those two.
Right. Those are probably the, I don't know if they're cop out answers because they're WWF or what have you, but they count in my mind. I mean,
a Ron Bass Brutus Beefcake Saturday Night's Main Event hair match.
Oh, okay. Wow.
That's probably the first one I watched, like, as it was, like, on.
Yeah.
Cause, like, I would have watched WrestleMania 3 on tape, like, a year, cause I, like, started watching in late 87, early 88. So I would have watched that, like, rental way later. But yeah, I'm going with Ron Bass Brutus Beefcake as my...
That's going to be the latest Apuestas match that I've ever watched, because I'm going to watch that right after the show. It sounds awesome.
But for, like, Lucha Libre, it was in my, like, grabbing tapes. So I have one of two, I think it is. I think it's either Love Machine, Eddie Guerrero versus Santo and Octagon. It's either that or it's Atlantis Volano 3. And I'm not sure which.
Oh, yeah. Both of those are awesome, first off. And they're both – they're understandable, like, why you'd see them early, because they're probably the two Lucha matches that have gotten the most hype from Meltzer. Mine is in a similar vein. I never got a ton of Lucha via like tape trading and stuff. Even though I was in that scene for the sort of the end days of it. But I think the first time I really got into Lucha stuff was I guess about a decade ago when they had their most recent like real boom with Mexico as the sort of main face. And he had a few. I mean, the best one is probably the one versus Casas, but I'm sure that I saw ones earlier than that. Like, there's one versus Black Warrior that I probably saw. I don't think he had an actual Apuestas match against Inferno. Hijo del El Diablo was, like, another one that was around that time. It's, like, it's one of those, like, Black Warrior or Diablo, I think, would be my guess.
It's interesting how people get into this stuff, but
yeah,
it's
I think it's interesting too. Like, it's probably hard for fans now. I mean, wrestling has for both of us sounding like old men here, but like even 10 years ago in 2006, when like YouTube was like first starting to be a wrestling thing, and like stuff didn't really exist yet, hearing the hype of somebody like Mystico was incredible, because like I mean he was just such a draw, and like was so I mean had this like cult around him almost, and like obviously I wasn't getting tapes when Misawa was like in his heyday, right? In like the mid, 10 years previous to that or anything like that. I was 10 years old, but like it sort of felt like that same thing of just like, there's this guy who's just incredible in another country and you have to seek out everything,
You know how big Mystico was? There was a channel out of Quebec. The French speaking province that's right beside mine. And it started airing CML weekly in 2005 for like almost a year. So I was watching it as Mystico just became a star and started to get like the biggest thing. I think the first show was Paraguayo Junior's Rudo turn. So I was watching week to week at that point. That's how big Mystico even got on French-speaking Quebec channel here in Canada.
So. And I'm sure everybody knows this, but just in case they don't, Mystico, shortly after this, then signed with WWE and wrestled as Sin Cara for a while. And now is back in CMLL as Caristico.
After a stop in AAA as Mystico.
Mystices or something. Yeah.
A confusing name.
Yeah, just like a bunch of Z's and Y's and an M thrown in there, yeah.
What's confusing is there is a current Mystico in CMLL.
Yes, there is another Mystico that is not the Mystico we're talking about.
Actually, this is the third Mystico, because the first Mystico is Hunico, who is now the second Sin Cara.
Yeah.
Oh, what a wacky turn of events that was. But let's get into our show proper here.
Yeah.
And we're talking about the CML anniversary show from 2015, September the 18th. And CML's anniversary show, biggest CML show of the year, very similar to WrestleMania. So there's one tie-in. The main event of this one was a Máscara match with La Sombra and Atlantis. La Sombra, who's competing at NXT this weekend, but I forget against who.
He's Andre Dalmas, for those of you who don't know, although if you're listening to this, you probably do. And he is wrestling a debuting Tommy End.
Who's Aleister Black.
Yeah, I guess. Which is, a fine NXT name. Of the NXT random name generation, Aleister Black, it could be worse, I guess. Yeah. I mean, I think both wrestlers are good, and I think Black's stuff like his sort of, you know, go-to spots work really well in sort of like a 10 to 15 minute showcase, which is not what that would be. So I think it's going to be really good. I think that Almas is the, you know, match in, match out, the bright spot of NXT right now. I think he's really great. You know, it's I'm excited to watch his match. I hope that he starts to click with the crowd soon, because the NXT crowd is very finicky. I honestly think he would do better on Raw or SmackDown at this point, because I think his stuff would get over rather than like the NXT crowd, which sort of needs you to have a name in their mind prior to you showing up to be successful.
Yeah. And we'll talk about all this stuff at the end, when we talk about if they made the right decision or not. Because there's some controversy here, because this was when it happened. People were kind of pissed a little bit.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure.
So we'll talk about that at the end. But first, let's go through some history here.
Yes.
So we have La Sombra, who that means the shadow, if anyone doesn't speak Spanish, which is me. He actually started as Berlante Jr. in 2007, and then was Rey Aztec, and then was Guerrero Aztec once, and then he was La Sombra. So, went through a few names. As Berlante Jr., he beat Kimura in 2006. He beat, he beat Safrio. And these were all in smaller promotions. And then he moved on to CMLL, where he actually took Foligno's mask in 2010.
Foligno's part of the Casas family.
So. Yeah. And he was one of my favorites the first time I saw Lucha.
Yeah.
He took Olympico's mask in a mini multi-man match in 2010 at the anniversary show. And then at the 2013... he took Volador Jr.'s mask with another huge win. And then that leads us to the match we're talking about tonight. So,
yeah.
Some huge masks he took, really.
Yeah, I mean, La Sombra was, tremendous, first off, right? Like, he really connected with the crowd. He was really over. And he was also very good from a young age, too. It wasn't like highly regarded at the time necessarily, but like a lot of the stuff from his run under the different masks is on YouTube now, or you know, captured somewhere, and you can watch it and you can like really see like, oh, you know, this guy is destined for very good things, you know. It's, you know, CMLL, not for once, that's been fair to CMLL, but CML is a company that a lot of times you wonder about their booking decisions, but it seems like they understood that they had something back from Sombra, and they did that pretty well, at least in a
way. Yeah, and he was splitting time with New Japan, where he was the Intercontinental Champion there for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So let's move on to also, Atlantis, which it's a little more.
Yeah, we could do like an hour long podcast just on all of his Apuestas matches, I think.
Yeah, and he's one of my my all time favorites. But 1984, so going back in time, he beat Al Talisman. In 86, Hombre Bala. In 89, he teamed with Santanico to beat three men for some reason. Tierra Fiento, Fiego, and MS1.
Huh.
And then 1990, he took Kung Fu's mask. And then in 1990, he teamed with Lismark and took the Animal's mask, who was Eddie Watts and Chuck Walton. I've never heard of those guys.
No, zero idea.
In 93, he took Mano Negro's mask. In 99, so big gap, he took Rey Parada's mask. 99, he took Gran Marcus Jr.'s. In 2000, he took Volano 3's, which, very famous match.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about that match at some point.
When I get back up track on the PWO 2K, and I get to watch it in context. When I get to that, we'll do it then.
Yeah.
In 2000, he also took Silver Fox's mask. Trying to see who Silver Fox is. I have no idea. In 2001, this is weird. It's saying August 13th, 15th, and 16th. I'm not sure how to read this. It says 01, 08, 13, 01, 08, 15. So 01, 08, 16. So back-to-back days, he beat Alpha Requo and won his mask in three different towns.
That's the carniest thing ever. I hope that's what happened.
That's what it looks like. Yeah, so he beat the same guy in three different towns to take his mask.
Man.
And in 2003, he beat El Hijo del the Grand Marcus. And then in brackets it says fake. and then 2004, he beat a different El Barico to take his mask. This one, Fidel Sierra. So, and then 2012, he won a four-way match to take El Pedrino's mask. And then we have the two famous matches. The anniversary show from 2014, Ultimo Guerrero's mask, another one of my all-time favorite matches, and then the match we're going to talk about tonight. So,
yeah, I guess just for some added context for people, like the Viano 3 Atlantis match,
six stars. And
easy 10 stars, and then the Ultimo Guerrero match, like
5 stars,
like. I mean, those two matches, like, if someone just told me, like, off the top of your head, JR, what are the top 10 lucha matches of all time? Like, both of those would probably be in the top 5. Like, yeah. So Atlanta.
Yeah, they're 15 years apart.
They're 15 years apart. and this match, like, is probably, like, just a slight step below those matches, but if you put it in the same conversation, I wouldn't be mad at you, right? So, like, I mean, it really is, like, pretty insane. Like, we always talk about Casas in terms of, like, the longevity. That's because Casas has been wrestling at the exact same level since 1987. But, like, for a wrestler like Atlantis to have two matches that far apart that are of equal quality is just insane.
That got him on my greatest wrestler ever poll doing pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just that feat is amazing.
It's funny. I went back and I looked over my ballot, and I had Atlantis at 53, which is, I guess, respectable. And like all of the people that are above him, I like can make an argument in my head. But, like, boy, it seems unfair
to put Atlantis
not in the top 50 wrestlers of all time when you have, like, two just shining examples of what a style should be on your resume, you know? Mm-hmm.
I feel like I had him stupid, like, 60-something.
Yeah.
And, I next time we do that, I gotta completely rectify that.
Yeah.
He'll be a lot higher.
Yes. There are, for example, I had Solar higher than him, and, like, I understand why I had Solar higher than him.
Yeah.
But, like, boy, that's tough looking back on it. Like,
Yeah, man. It was tough times. Yeah.
You had to make hard decisions in the GWE.
Yeah.
You
know? And there was only 18 months to do it, so the time was limited.
Yes. or you could have just done what most people did, which is not watch Lucha at all, and then just leave all these great wrestlers off, right?
Let's not get into that. We have La Sombra coming out with a really dope suit, and to foreshadow something that wasn't even a possibility at the time, he's coming out with a hat with a feather on it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, He does come out now, I guess, with the same hat, right?
It's NXT. Close if it's not the same, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, if you've never seen this match before, and I think we said this every week, you know, we hope you watch the match while we talk about it, right? But, like, if you've never seen this match before, like, from the first 30 seconds with La Samba's entrance, right, like, he just is the coolest person you've ever seen, right? And I know Los Ingobernables has blown up to be this, like, new NWO type thing. They're, like, the cool new group with Naito and Evil and Bushi. But, like, for my money, looking at Rush and looking at La Sombra coming out, just, like, the two biggest assholes in the entire world that just think they're so cool, and they're right.
Yeah.
Like, it's so perfect, you know?
Oh, man. Yeah. Yeah, I forgot to mention, yeah, Rush is La Sombra's second here.
Yes. Yeah, the seconds in this match are Volador Jr. and Rush. And, like, that could be a main event in an Anniversario, right? Like, that
it could be this year's, for all we know.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Yeah, two great wrestlers there who still going strong.
Yeah.
And, yeah, Atlantis comes out with his theme music, which is the theme music of this show, which is.
Yeah, kind of nice. Sure is.
And yeah, huge, Atlantis. Huge pop.
Oh, yeah. People love Atlantis. I for people who like have not seen Atlantis before, you know, I do think compared to like some of the other great luchadors like, you know, Casas and Satanico and El Santo or El Hijo del Santo, I should say, and like El Dandy to some extent, like Atlantis is on par with those guys, but like there is something about him that maybe is like a little more esoteric, you know, like that's a little more tied to Mexican culture. I guess less universal.
Well, the way I see it is like, okay, so if you're watching in the late 90s, 2000s, throughout the whole year, The Undertaker's a big deal, but he's not Austin or The Rock or those people, right? He's a little below them.
Yeah.
But then at WrestleMania with the streak, it's the biggest shit in the world.
Yeah.
I feel like Atlantis, because Atlantis's mask at anniversary shows or Atlantis's mask altogether is essentially the Undertaker streak. And it's the biggest thing when it's on the line, especially in an anniversary show. So he can kind of fly under the radar a little bit throughout the year. But when he's put in this position, it's huge.
That's a really great comparison, actually, and one I hadn't thought of, but I really love it. My comparison that I always make with him in terms of, like, WWE people or American people is John Cena, in that, like, you know, Atlantis's character, you know, they call him El Ídolo de los Niños, right? He's the idol of the children. He's there, like, I mean, you know, women and children love him, right? And I think that there's, like, a long stretch of his career where the like, adult male demographic sort of thinks he's this, like, you know, goody-goody cornball, you know? But eventually, like, his mask takes on this, like, mythical quality. He's really the last person of his generation who's still active, who still has his mask, right? Like, because Leo DeSanto is retired, you know, he's never going to mask. So, like, I mean, he's the guy at this point that's still going that could lose his mask. And it's, you know, I think there's sort of this, like, huge respect now. Kind of like The Undertaker, you know? Where it's just you go so long that people who, you know, in formative years don't like you eventually come to see you as, like, really sort of respected force, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, so the crowd, needless to say, is very into this. And so you have basically you have the super legend here defending his mask against basically if it wasn't Rush, it was La Sombra, it was the future of Lucha of CML.
Yeah.
Like it was one of those two. So you kind of have like the guy you know, like, is becoming the man and is going to be the man going forward versus the old-time legend. So That was another cool aspect here. But when we got into the first fall, it was kind of a lot about the seconds, needless yes. to say.
Yeah, no, I mean, and like, not as it should be necessarily, but like, the seconds are big enough personalities, especially Roosh, where like, they're gonna play a huge part, right? I mean, I think that there's a couple things I'd want to talk about in this first fall for people who are still getting into Lucha. Body language is just so clear here, right? Like, you can watch this match on mute. You can watch it without knowing who any of these people are, right? And La Sombra offers a handshake to start. But, like, the way he's doing it, you somehow know that he's a dick,
yeah.
right? Like, he's not doing it like you know, the code of honor or something. He's doing it to make fun of Atlantis, yeah. you know? You know, the first fall, I mean, I think that there's sort of a really unique and interesting story that's being told, especially compared to the matches we've talked about previously on the show, where Atlantis has been in so many of these Apuestas matches, right? That I think he sort of like the narrative here is that he understands that like the heel, right? The Rudo is going to try and just like bamboozle him and cheat and do whatever. Right. And like, you know, they're going to try and bloody him up. They're going to run him around the outside. And he's just like, you know what? Fuck this. Like, I'm coming out guns blazing.
Yeah.
And I mean, he hits or he tries to hit a tope right off the bat. But La Sombra, like, hits this insane tope over the top instead. And then acts like a dick about it. but yeah, I mean, it's a really different story. You know, there's a really cool moment where Atlantis fights off Sombra trying to rip the mask, and then goes to sort of rip the mask of La Sombra, like he sort of is about to, and then lets go, which I think is really cool. It's like, yeah, I could do this, you know, like, but I don't need to because I'm like the nicest guy in the world and I'm still going to beat you, you know?
I'm going to take this fair and square.
Yeah, exactly. Which is like such it's all these little things that set up such a strong narrative and show you exactly who their characters are. And, you know, then Roosh, of course, is like cheating constantly throughout all of this. And like just beating up Atlantis at every opportunity. And Atlantis, or I'm sorry, Roosh has like the greatest, like, I didn't do anything wrong body language ever. Like, there's something about it. I can talk about Roosh, but he to me is the most physically charismatic wrestler since Tajiri.
He's the most charismatic wrestler, period, since The Rock, probably.
Yeah, I mean, like, he is electric, right? And, like, do all his matches deliver? No. Like, does he sleepwalk through playable main events? Constantly. but, like, if he has a microphone or if he's in the ring with someone that, like, he cares, that, like, he thinks will eventually make him money, like, there's no one I'd rather watch. Right? Like, I know it's going to be stupid.
Especially these Rush LA Park feud that's been going on for a couple of years now.
Yeah, it's insane. It's the best thing going. It's like an old territories feud where just like they just take it to some random little indie and have this insane match and like hundreds of thousands of people will watch it, right? Like, yeah. But so like I guess let's talk about the finish of this fall. The fall itself is a pretty good competitive match.
Yeah, very competitive compared to what you expect.
Yes, yeah. You know, I think that, you know, they set up this sort of idea of acquired knowledge versus innate talent, right? Where Sombra is this sort of, like, force of nature in some way, where, you know, he's really young, he's in the prime of his athletic career. You know, he can do all this awesome, insane stuff. You know, he's clearly in better shape than Atlantis. But Atlantis has been in so many of these things and has yet to lose that it's sort of a great standoff there. Atlantis does have like a pretty resounding kick out at two after like a, you know, a big boot or something that I think is interesting because like that would have ended it, fall in a lot of Apuesta's matches. And I think it shows the audience that they're set up for something completely different. And then the finish itself is Atlantis gets a roll up and is about to win. And then Rouge pulls the referee out of the ring in the first fall, you know, it's great. And the referee who takes a huge bump, by the way,
yeah,
like just a really pretty grotesque bump to the outside, comes back in and immediately declares Atlantis the winner of the first fall.
Yeah.
So this is probably what this is the first match we've watched where the Technico wins the first fall.
Yeah, that sounds right. That's yeah. It's not the most common way to go for these right. matches.
I mean, and there's a reason for that. Like yeah. it's probably in the hands of worse workers, it is less narratively interesting. But I think it's really strong here.
Especially I wrote in my notes, Atlantis kind of had the win, but he didn't. So it's not yeah. it's not like he looked like strong. Like he still looked like he was in trouble.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I wrote here in my notes for this match that this fall sets up so much. It's like the Chekhov's gun of Primera Falls. Like there's just there's so many different things here that happen that then sort of get closed and referenced later, which we'll get into. But if you watch this match multiple times, it is a rare wrestling match that rewards multiple viewings. Not because you're missing out on context necessarily, like, but because everything that they do is then referenced later, which is like really profoundly interesting to me from a performance standpoint.
And it's something we've noticed in these Lucha matches that they set things up and they bring them back, which is kind of feels like a lost art in America a little bit. Like it doesn't happen all as much as you'd want.
Sure. Yeah.
Like Bret Hart was someone who did that a lot, but it's not like something that Randy Orton does.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, you know, and like, it's just a different style. It's not like one thing is worse than another, you know? Yeah. I mean, or I should say, one thing is not objectively worse than another. Like, I think it's worse, but like...
Both can work, if done yeah. right. Yeah. So we have the referee, to start the Segunda Caída, the referee kicks out both the seconds. I don't know why.
Yes.
Why yeah. Volador Jr. was kicked out, but I understand why Rouge was kicked out.
Yeah, that's the most amazing thing to me. Like Volador has done nothing so far. Like Rouge like beats the shit out of Atlantis like 5 feet away from Volador, who just stands there, right? Yeah. And then like in between the falls, Volador tries to get involved because Rouge is just like putting the boots to Atlantis, and Sombra kicks the shit out of Volador. And just, like, gets rid of him. But, like, he really has done nothing. But the ref says, I guess, fair is fair. Both of them. Which is funny to me. Yeah.
And so what did you think of this second fall here?
Yeah, so this is it's pretty brief. But I think that there's some nice things that we can talk about. I think that, you know, last week I talked about subversion and subversive equals, which is something that I'm going to bring back here. I think you get sort of a nice mirror or a nice subversion of the opening sequence in the Primera, where Atlantis go, you know, sort of comes out guns blazing and goes for a tope, but Sombra is able to skirt it and hit a huge one of his own. In this one, we have a similar sequence where Sombra is trying to sort of take advantage and then gets thrown out of the ring, and Atlantis finally hits that tope. So I think that sets up a lot of stuff. I think it shows that, you know, Sombra sort of was starting to take the match. I don't know if more seriously is the way to say it, but like certainly felt desperation a little bit more.
Well, he had his ace in the hole kicked out, Rouge, right. And now he's got to kind of like focus in as opposed to just having this overconfidence. He's got to deliver now. You know,
for sure. Yeah.
On.
And he does that. He shows that really well, sort of in the moments between the moments too. You know, he shakes his head a lot. He starts to powder a little bit more and go out of the ring. You know, him and Rush have sort of like an extended goodbye to each other, which is very sweet.
Yeah.
And then the finish here is Sombra hitting. You know, he gets sort of a roll up, and then he lifts like a schoolboy pin, and then he lifts Atlantis up into like a deadlift powerbomb out of the schoolboy pin, which is really visually impressive. And gets a quick three count here. I think that whoever laid this match out, you know, I don't know how CMLL works, if they have road agents like WWE, or if like Atlantis basically told the Sombra, like, all right, this is exactly what we're going to do. which wouldn't surprise me, right? Yeah. But I think that this fall being so quick, I mean, it's probably what, like less than 5 minutes or something. The first fall's about 10 minutes. Yeah. Like, makes a lot of sense to me because no one thinks Atlantis is going to win 2-0, right?
Yeah.
That's just not within the realm of possibility. So, like, having it go long and having Atlantis stay on offense or get a bunch of near falls, like, there's no drama in it. So I'm glad that Sombra was able to sort of like really recapitalize and sort of, you know, get momentum back in some way and go into what is an extended third fall here. In some ways, for an Apuestas match, this match is structured similar fashion to like just a regular three fall lucha match, you know, singles lucha match, where you'll have sort of quick stuff happen in the first two falls and then sort of like an extended, almost like the third fall, the Tercera, is an entire match, which isn't necessarily what happens here, but it's more in between the two than some of the Apuestas matches that we've talked about last, where there's sort of this like fraught emotion throughout the whole thing. You know, this one isn't a blood feud settler necessarily like some others have been. It's more just sort of like, these are the two best dudes and this is competition, you know?
Yeah. It's not about hate so much as about, embarrassing and, your opponent. Yeah.
Yeah. Proving superiority.
Yeah. And I gotta say, after, Sombra, gets the pin, he kind of taunts the crowd a little bit, and
yes,
the heat here is just unreal.
The heat throughout this match is bonkers, especially like in the finishing stretch, which we'll get to, but like people are going legitimately apeshit, right? I mean, it's like it's like Hogan Rock level crowd interaction, you know? I mean, that's like the only comparison I can think about. Like, it's just everyone that was there was watching that match and like living and dying with that match. So,
yeah, for sure. And man, they had some things to live and die for on the third fall. Man, there's so many. One thing I like about the way Atlantis works his Apuestas matches is that he gets a lot of near falls in. Like, he's going for the win. So there's roll ups, there's near falls. It's so dramatic.
Yeah.
And the pace of the match really picks up here.
Oh yeah. I mean, they're never going slowly. This is not a slow match by any stretch.
No.
But like, they turn it up to 11 in the third fall. But yeah, I wrote in my notes even, and I agree with you 100%, like Atlantis, this match in some way is structured very similarly, especially in the third fall, to the Atlantis Viano match, where it's just like towards the end here, Like, everything that both guys does has, like, clear sense that, like, this move can physically end it. It's not here to wear down somebody or to, you know, like, there's no, I don't want to say there's no psychology, right? But, like, there's tons of psychology. But there's no psychology in, like, oh, I'm gonna do some limb work here and that's gonna pay off.
No.
Like, all of the first two falls is the quote unquote limb work, because those are the spots that they're then working their way back in here and sort of reflecting and re-looking at. Those are the things that they're like, the game plans are now being subverted. Okay? And when they're not, everything else is like, all right, well, I'm going to try and win right now. Like, that's my only goal. It makes so much sense to me as a viewer, you know?
The first fall that, the first fall, the first near fall that almost gets me is, I remember this spot so well. Cause I, let me ask you, how did you watch this the first time?
Probably on YouTube,
but I like think. Within days, within years, like.
Oh, it was pretty recent after it happened. You know, I mean, I obviously knew the finish, or I didn't know the finish, but I knew the result. Okay. But I did watch it, like, basically as soon as it went up on YouTube. So probably within a few weeks, right?
I remember because I avoided spoilers. I think it was a day, the next day, or like I downloaded it or something.
Sure.
But yeah, I watched it without spoilers, and I was on the edge of my seat. And I remember the first. There's the springboard by Sombra that Atlantis turns into a powerbomb.
Yeah.
And that's like the one early moment that I like almost bought a couple years ago when I watched it like as it the next day or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's a huge moment there. And that one sticks out like more than most in this match.
Yeah. There's like, and again, like those power bombs, like, first of all, they're awesome. And like kudos to Atlantis for like switching up, you know, his offense, and like it shows how smart a worker he is, right? And like he's like, I mean, I don't know a ton about improv comedy, but like it seems like he's a great improv comedian or like a great scene partner, in that like Atlantis is always taking what the other person brings to the match and then implementing that in his own arsenal in some way. So you know, he lost the second fall to that deadlift powerbomb. And then Atlantis himself, because, you know, the way that, you know, Lucha is structured for his generation is so much about proving you're better and proving your superiority and your masculinity, that Atlantis then feels the need to somehow work in a powerbomb himself. Right?
Yeah.
Like, this match wouldn't have been complete if Atlantis didn't do some sort of powerbomb variation. So, I mean, I really love it. But the power bomb into the tope is insane. And then right after that, Sombra hits this, like, double moonsault that I think he still does in NXT. Where it's, like, the lion salt that he lands on his feet and then does a standing moonsault, which is bonkers.
Yeah.
And
I like the point around this time, too, where they go to the outside. So Sombra does the thing where he jumps into the corner and then jumps, like, flies to the outside doing, like, a twisting plancha.
Yeah.
And then they're on the floor, and this is a spot I really love, is Sombra's in the crowd, and Atlantis, from the ringside area, jumps over the guardrail and does a tope into the crowd.
Yeah.
taking the fight right to him.
Yeah, that's another, like, amazing example, though, of the subversion. Like, we sort of glossed over it in the first fall, but Sombra does the exact same thing to Atlantis at first fall that Atlantis then reverses here, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's just so much that is referenced from the earlier moments. It's so intentional, and it's so clear, and it's all timed so well. The other thing about this match that, like, it's hard to impress upon people unless you just sit down and watch it, but like everything in this match looks perfect, right? There's no there's no moves that I'm like, ah, like they hit that wrong or that was awkward, right? Like, yeah. Everything looks amazing, and not in the amazing way that, like, and not that this is a bad thing, but not in the amazing way that, like, a Chris Daniels moonsault does, where it looks acrobatic. Like, everything looks like it's two athletic people that are struggling together. And it's awesome.
Yeah. You know? I think a really good example of that is there's a near fall here. I've never really seen this in Lucha, but Atlantis hits a Stan Hansen level lariat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Where he just, like, wipes out Sombra with his lariat and gets his two that everyone thinks is over on.
Like, oh, yeah. It's ridiculous. It was a huge, huge bite. There's a ton of near falls in here that I bite on. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
There's another great thing in here, just like before I get into sort of the, like, beginning of the finishing stretch with you, which is amazing. I'm so effusive about this match. I mean, it's just
well, this is the match you've wanted to do every week since we started.
Yeah, I mean, it was my idea for the first show. I really love this match. And rewatching it was a joy. You know, I hadn't watched it. But it's like Sombra's body language really changes here in this third fall. Like, it's so clear how tired he is. And it's such an interesting inversion of the beginning where, you know, Sombra looks the more physically intimidating of the two. You know, he's cut, he's young, and Atlantis, I mean, you know, Atlantis looks like a Mexican man in his late 40s, right?
Yep.
But, like, now, like, everything that Sombra does, like, he, you know, he's no longer playing to the crowd as much, you know, he's hesitating on the outside more. You really sort of feel the tide turn, and you get the sense that, like, this is way more difficult than you thought it would be, which I think is, like, a really powerful, profound, you know, thing to play in a match like this, you know? Mm-hmm. But I guess that's a pretty good segue to sort of the early finishing stretch.
For me, I feel like that starts where Atlantis goes for his torture rack submission and Roosh comes out.
Oh, so I'm going to go a
You're
tiny bit
further back.
Yeah, I'm okay. Going before this. So, just a few minutes before that, Sombra again gets a roll up, like the exact same setup as the end of the second fall.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And, he goes for the roll up. He tries the deadlift powerbomb again and eventually hits it. And there's, like, a ton of struggle. You know, like, some people, you know, may say that this looks sloppy or whatever, but I think, even though this exact sequence won him the second fall, Sombra is so tired and so sort of mentally defeated at this point that he feels that it won't do it. And so he puts his feet on the ropes, right? Yeah. And he gets two count, and then the ref sees it and stops the count, even though Atlantis doesn't kick out.
Yeah.
Or Atlantis may kick out, but it's, like, unclear that it's late. I honestly don't remember. But I always get the sense that, like, that Sombra could have won this match, but Atlantis had defeated him upstairs, you know, 5 minutes before. And I think that's so awesome. You know, it's like something like a chess master being like, oh, you know, like, you lost 40 moves ago, you know, yeah. That sort of.
And to me, this is where the comparison to the Undertaker in a streak, like, really fits. Like, people just don't try to pin the Undertaker when he's got the streak. They try for a second finisher. Like, Triple H tries for a tombstone. He doesn't just, you know, do a pedigree. So it's stuff like this that it's so mythical
right.
Atlantis's mass that it outthinks you, really.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Like in some way, the participant in the match becomes a fan, right? Like, because the mystique of Atlantis is we all buy into the fact that when his mask is on the line, he is unbeatable, right? And at some point in the match, his opponent ends up believing that as well.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. I mean, there's so much meat on the bone in this match. Yeah. But yes, and then that sort of takes us directly. Well, I guess there's one huge spot in between where Sombra does a moonsault from the top to the outside, which is insane. I mean, it looks crazy. But then right after that, we've got Roosh coming out, coming back out, I should say.
And it forces Atlantis to let go of the submission for a second.
So Atlantis gets Sombra into La Atlantida, right? Which is like sort of like a spinning torture rack. It's about as quick to the finish as you'll find in Lucha, you know? Because Lucha doesn't have a ton of stuff like that, you know? Most matches are finished with roll-ups, you know? But this one is like, oh, yeah, it's over, right? This beat Viano 3, this beat everybody, so it's over. And he's trying to get it in, and Roosh comes down, even though Roosh has been barred from ringside. And then I wrote in my notes, because I find this, you know, I find myself very funny, that it makes sense that Roosh comes down, because he is literally ungovernable, right? Like, you can't tell him what to do. He is los ingobernables. Roosh is going to do whatever he wants. I'm honestly shocked that he left ringside in the first place, you know? there's a ton of near falls here.
After this, Sombra's like dropkick, and then he does his NXT finisher, the double knees in the corner.
Yes.
For like a huge near fall.
Oh yeah. I mean, everyone bit on it, right? Atlantis dives from the top rope to the outside. I mean, this, like, the spots here are massive, you know? And then the, like, after Sombra can't pin him with the double knees, he attempts a martinet, a tombstone pile driver. Like, he sets Atlantis up for it.
Which,
like,
is directly illegal. It's illegal.
Yeah. So he does, for those of you who don't know, like, it is illegal. He would not have won the match had he done a tombstone pile driver.
But he was that desperate. He would have, in fact,
lost his mask, right?
Yeah.
But he was just so frustrated and so beaten at this point that he's like, fuck it. I have to do this. Like, I have to cheat. And the ref stops him from doing it, like you'll often see Lucha refs do. And then Atlantis, directly after that, in the sort of kerfuffle with the referee, gets Sombra up for Atlantida and goes down to his knees like he did against Viano.
Yeah.
And there we have it. That is the victory.
Fireworks. The crowd goes crazy.
Immediate fireworks. Yeah, it's awesome. This match is awesome. It's so good.
It's so good. Yeah. Yeah.
There's not a ton of matches where I can watch them on tape, because I watch a lot of wrestling on tape, obviously, or on the computer or whatever. And you get pretty used to it, right? But there's not a ton of matches that I say, like, I wish I was at this match.
Mm-hmm.
But this is one of them. I wish I was physically in the crowd for this match, just going crazy.
Yeah. And man, everyone's going crazy here. Atlantis, you know, the hero, that was his last mask match. I'm really hoping, like, it seemed to be setting up a Roosh match here, but that has not happened yet, which doesn't mean it won't happen, because it's CMLL and sometimes it takes a long time. but Atlantis one day will have another mask match, and it will be awesome and huge, and I can't wait.
And I hope he wins it. I hope he never unmasks.
Yeah, it's... I'm really, like, this... Let's talk about it now, because people thought Sombra was going to be the one to take Atlantis' mask at this time.
Yes.
And when it didn't happen, the internet didn't like it. So.
Oh, yeah. People went crazy. So, like, think about it this way. All right. So, like, let's stay with our Undertaker. Let's stay with our Undertaker metaphor for the moment. So, let's say the streak had never been broken. Let's say the Undertaker was still undefeated going into WrestleMania 32 on Sunday, right?
And let's say Roman Reigns.
Let's say for the sake of argument that Roman Reigns was facing the Undertaker and the Shield was still together, and Roman Reigns was still as popular as he was in the Shield. That is basically the setup for this match. And people would have been pissed, right? People would have been like, all right, this is how the streak should end. Like, yeah. They would have fantasy booked it in their head. Like, this is the guy. It's going to make this guy forever. And then it didn't happen, and people were upset. Obviously hindsight is 20/20, right? With Sombra going to NXT right after this, like,
he signed 2 months after.
Yeah.
So I wonder if Sombra won, would he have left?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's tough. You got to think that they were sniffing around, right? Like, because, I mean, even before he signed, like, there were, I think him and Roosh both went in for like tryouts and stuff like that, you know, but it's crazy. It's got to be so hard for companies like CMLL. I mean, not that there's a huge clamoring, it seems, from the WWE to sign luchadors, but like, it's got to be tough to like think about, like, oh, we're building around these people, you know, and we want to build up this next generation, but we also don't want to, like, have someone take a mask that is super meaningful. Like, really, like, the mask is the biggest draw in CMLL right now, Atlantis' mask, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like the Undertaker streak was the biggest draw at WrestleMania. And, like, have it go to some guy who's then going to be unmasked for zero reason in a company halfway across the world, right?
Yeah,
and
if
Key Largo, you know?
If Sombra won and then left, that would have been horrible.
Yeah, I mean, that's the worst thing ever, right? Yeah. So, like, if you assume that Sombra was always going to NXT, this is 100% the right call.
But if you don't know...
Yeah. If you feel as though Sombra would have stayed, then it's a little muddy.
Yeah. This is the one we'll never really know, I think, the answer to.
Right. I think, I guess there's also, like, you know, we probably shouldn't overlook the fact that, like, even unmasked Sombra, had he stayed, probably is, like, super, because he's a really good looking man, you know? It's not like when Ultimo Guerrero unmasked and you're like, oh, all right, that's what he looks like.
Yeah, but Ultimo Guerrero is super just as over, I think, without the mask.
It's over.
I wonder, though, because do you think Sombra wrestles with as much charisma without the mask as he does with the mask?
That's interesting, because, I guess the evidence points to no, right? But I think it was just, like, insane that NXT was like, you know, we should take this dude who's, like, the coolest heel in the entire world right now and turn him into a plucky baby face.
Yeah, that was ridiculous.
It's like the worst booking decision they could have ever made. Like, it's like, can you imagine the outcry if they signed Nakamura to NXT and then gave him the Eugene gimmick? Like, Like, that's basically the equivalent here, you know?
Yeah, so fair to say we recommend this match?
Yeah, 100 stars. All the stars.
All the stars. That's great. So yeah, check it out. It'll get you a good appetizer for NXT. It'll get you a big atmosphere, which is an appetizer for WrestleMania. So
yeah,
that's really good.
It'll show you that there's other companies in the world. I mean, and you probably knew this already, that have like great shows steeped in tradition. And I think it's a really great watch this week. But enjoy WrestleMania. Yeah, enjoy NXT. I'll be reviewing NXT for VOW, like I have the past two takeovers. I don't watch the weekly NXT show, so it's always a bit of a bumpy ride. but it'll be fun. I'm excited. I'm excited for Aleister Black versus La Sombra.
Yeah, no, that should be fun, and a lot of other great shows. Do you have anything else to plug besides your upcoming NXT review?
No, you know, we mentioned, briefly the Roosh LA Park matches. I recently wrote a piece on that for Pace. If you go on Pace, you can go on there and get some context for those. Those aren't Equestus matches, so we're never going to cover those unless they do one, which would be amazing.
Oh my God. If they did one.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think they ever will. I don't think we're in any
risk. I know, but if they did,
we would stop the presses. We might have to do it live, you know.
Ooh.
We might have to watch it live, you know.
There we go.
But yeah. So if you're interested in some context or to watch those matches, you can read my short little piece there. And that's really about it for me upcoming. Yeah. How about you, Steven?
Yeah. The only other thing. For me is also, I guess, yesterday as you're listening to this, or some point this week, the Pro Wrestling Super Show is, me and Tim, we recorded an episode where we did our favorite 33 wrestling moments. So.
There you go. That's awesome.
Sit back for 2.5 hours of us, reminiscing down memory lane. Like, you know, a lot of weird personal stories and cool moments and matches, and then like just cool moments from our life and shit like that. So it's
that's awesome. I'm gonna watch that or listen to that, because that's the exact type of thing that I love out of that. So, like, that's why I like wrestling.
Yeah, for sure. So that was a lot of fun to record, and that'll be up to Twitter though.
Yeah, at Wrestling Bubble.
Such a good name. And I'm Stephen Graham, TWS. And to end the show, I thought you were going to say something.
Oh, I left you hanging there. I'll use the phrase that I used when talking about this match first on Twitter. Comparison is the thief of joy.